New York, September 4, 2011. Ulchidodi. Come, my beloved. Song of Solomon 7:11. Make haste, my beloved, and be thou like to a roe or to a young hart upon the mountains of spices. Song of Solomon 8:14. Comma 1. Dear brethren, our convention, our fellowship is slowly coming to an end. Tonight we will leave for our homes. Tomorrow, perhaps the day after tomorrow, or in a few days at the most, we will wake up in our own beds. In the morning, maybe even still in the evening, we will think about our daily activities. At home, at the office, in the garden, our duties are awaiting, which we have put off for a while. Some of them are nice, others, rather tedious. Some of us like our everyday life. Some, however, return to their harsh reality, which they were able to forget for a moment here, in the fellowship of the Word and God's people. Regardless of whether we will get back to our temporality with pleasure, or with a heavy heart, one thing will likely remain common for all of us. 2. We will yearn. I hope that for many days to come we will remember the discourses that we heard here, the conversations we carried out here with our friends, and the warmth of the fellowship that we experienced. 3. We will yearn for the sweet savor of the heights which we were able to ascend here. The longing for such places of meeting with our brethren is a good and constructive thing, and even somewhat pleasant. It testifies to an unfulfilled desire, for, although it causes some tension in the heart, and, if it is not realized for a long time, it can even be felt as pain and suffering, in its essence yearning is a noble and good feeling. Most often we miss people we love, or places where we experienced good times and where we felt good. Yearning prompts us to positive action. 5. If we miss someone we love, we write them a letter, call them or make a trip to visit them. If we long for a kindred fellowship, we will go to a Sunday or weekday meeting, or travel to a convention. 6. The reality is that for the time being in fellowship with the brethren and other beloved friends is not permanent. We only see them from time to time. Sometimes we have to accept the departure of those we love. And that's why we yearn. In connection with this feeling of yearning, 7, I would like to tell you, dear brethren, a love story, a story about longing, about unfulfilled emotions. This story has no happy ending, but it remains open, and maybe we will be able to add to it a conclusion which we would be happy to see or hear. Our story takes us back to the ancient times in the East, where the kings had large harems in their palaces, and their messengers would periodically travel through the surrounding lands in order to bring another young beauty for their monarch. The girl sometimes hailed from a rich and respectable family, and was brought to the palace in pursuit of political goals of the kingdom. Sometimes, however, she would come from an ordinary family and it was only her exceptional beauty that drew the attention of the king or his messengers. In the mountainous regions of Lebanon, there lived a relatively wealthy family. They owned vineyards on the nearby hills, and their flocks of sheep and goats grazed on the mountain pastures. Among the siblings, a beautiful girl stood out, with her swarthy complexion, tall, beautiful figure and elegant movements. She gained local fame as the most beautiful among the women. The girl's brothers weren't always happy about that. They feared some local shepherd could fall in love with her, who would not be able to offer them a rich dowry. In those times and lands it was customary for the groom to pay for his future wife by presenting the bride's family with rich gifts. To dismiss the risk of an unforeseen development of their sister's love affairs, her brothers sent her away up to guard the vineyard, and to herd sheep and goat kids far away from people. And the girl, by spending much time outdoors, was becoming even more beautiful, and her complexion, more swarthy and health. The brothers' attempts proved useless. The pastures they chose, though distant, were still occasionally visited by shepherds. Perhaps by coincidence, perhaps deliberately, that special one and his sheep found themselves exactly where the girl pastured her goat kids. Spring love between the two burned like a bright flame intensified by marvelous nature that surrounded them. The cedars in nearby woods stood high like walls of their rooms. The young couple trod on the soft, green carpet of lush grass adorned with designs composed from colorful flowers. The vault of their chamber was sapphire by day and black by night, lit by flickering sparks of millions of stars. Thus was born the love between a guardian of vineyards and a shepherd of sheep. Meanwhile, the messengers of the great king arrived in town, asking about the most beautiful woman. The parents and brothers quickly negotiated favorable conditions of a marriage contract. Soon, another troop of royal messengers brought gifts for the parents, promises of influential positions at the court for the brothers, and beautiful gowns and jewelry for the girl. I don't know if they asked her opinion. Perhaps she even agreed. It must have seemed a great attraction to her to be in the capital city, in the palace, surrounded by the most beautiful women in the kingdom. Maybe she dreamed of being a mother of princes and kings. And thus she found herself being a mother of princes and kings. And thus she found herself in the harem of the great king. She was greeted with curiosity. Perhaps even the king himself gave her a gracious look. Nevertheless, he had 1,000 other women. Then began the usual palace life. Conversations, strolls in the garden, gossip, intrigues, and the omnipresent rivalry and jealousy. Perhaps one of the beautiful girls will manage to become the real wife of the king. Time was passing. The girl, separated from her familial environment, was more and more often reminiscing upon the beauty of mountain pastures, the aroma of vineyards and herbs, the lost sense of freedom. She began to yearn. 7a, surrounded by the high walls of her palace in the city, she could only view the nearby desert hills through barred windows. Also, that one special shepherd appeared in her dreams more and more frequently. With the advent of every spring, she pondered the unrealized feelings. In her dreams, the swarthy young man arrived with his sheep to the hills turned verdant in spring. When the wind sometimes blew the fragrance of vineyards and herbs from the fields into the city, the pain of yearning became so poignant that she would run and stand on the walls, and the guards would bring her back to the palace chambers. Sometimes it even seemed that her beloved shepherd arrived at her door at night. She would jump out of bed, quickly put on the robe to let him in. But there was no one on the other side of the door. Sometimes she could almost smell the scent of his oils on the doorknob. Again, she would run by night to the city walls, lamenting to the girls she encountered, telling them of her love. Or maybe she actually didn't see anybody, except the impervious wall guards, who forcibly dragged her back to the sleeping chambers inside the palace. The shepherd also dreamed of his girl, also longed for her. Looking towards the distant land, to which she was taken, he remembered her beauty, the way she moved, her scent, the virtues of her body and spirit. He probably also dreamed of seeing her again. And this is where this romantic tale actually breaks off. I don't know what happened next. Perhaps life added some conclusion, or maybe not. The only thing that remains for us from this story is the beautiful poetry of the biblical book titled Song of Songs, the Book of Love and Yearning, 7b. The author of these verses could have been King Solomon himself. In the midst of his harem, among 1,000 women, there were probably many girls uprooted in this way with their environment. Or, perhaps, such a story never happened, and Solomon in his wisdom created this parable to describe the love of an Israelite towards God, or a Christian's love for Christ, the longing of an earthly man for the spiritual world of enduring freedom and holiness. If any of you, dear brethren, have thought at this moment that the story I told does not come directly from the biblical record, but is rather my paraphrase, you were probably right. The Song of Songs is a book of poetry, and in poetry there is no clearly defined plot. The purpose of its verses is to describe feelings, the beauty of love and longing. Still, somewhere at the root of poetic expressions we discover the story of the author's experiences, at least a trace of his imagination, his observations pertaining to the actual spiritual experiences of people around him. Let us quote a few verses from Song of Songs to discover some of these traces. The king hath brought me into his chambers. I am black, but comely, O ye daughters of Jerusalem. My mother's children were angry with me, they made me the keeper of the vineyards, but mine own vineyard have I not kept. Tell me, O thou whom my soul loveth, where thou feedest. Song of Songs 1:4-7. While the king sitteth at his table, My spikenard sendeth forth the smell thereof. A bundle of myrrh is my well-beloved unto me, he shall lie all night betwixt my breasts. Song of Songs 1:12-13. Our bed is green. The beams of our house are cedar, and our rafters of fir. Song of Songs 1:16-17. Behold, he standeth behind our wall, he looketh forth at the windows, showing himself through the lattice. Song of Songs 2:9. O my dove, that art in the clefts of the rock, in the secret places of the stairs. Song of Songs 2:14. By night on my bed I sought him whom my soul loveth. I sought him, but I found him not. I will rise now, and go about the city in the streets, and in the broad ways I will seek him whom my soul loveth. I sought him, but I found him not. The watchmen that go about the city found me. Song of Songs 3:1-3. Behold his bed, which is Solomon's, 80 valiant men are about it, of the valiant of Israel. Song of Songs 3:7. The garden enclosed is my sister, my spouse, a spring shut up, a fountain sealed. Song of Songs 4:12. A well of living waters, and streams from Lebanon. Awake, O north wind, and come, thou south. Blow upon my garden, that the spices thereof may flow out. Let my beloved come into his garden. Song of Songs 4:15-16. I sleep, but my heart waketh. It is the voice of my beloved that knocketh, saying, open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my undefiled, for my head is filled with dew, and my locks with the drops of the night. I have put off my coat, how shall I put it on? I have washed my feet, how shall I defile them? My beloved put in his hand by the hole of the door, and my bowels were moved for him. I rose up to open to my beloved, and my hands dropped with myrrh, and my fingers with sweet-smelling myrrh, upon the handles of the lock. I opened to my beloved, but my beloved had withdrawn himself, and was gone. My soul failed when he spake. I sought him, but I could not find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer. The watchmen that went about the city found me. They smote me, they wounded me, the keepers of the walls took away my veil from me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if ye find my beloved, that ye tell him, that I am sick of love. Song of Songs 5:2-8. There are 80 queens, and 80 concubines, and virgins without number. Song of Songs 6:8. Before I was aware, my soul set me among the chariots of my princely people. Song of Songs 6:12. American standard, return, return, O Shelemite, return, return, that we may look upon thee. Song of Songs 6:13. O that thou wert as my brother, that sucked the breasts of my mother. When I should find thee without, I would kiss thee. Yea, I should not be despised. Song of Songs 8:1. Who is this that cometh up from the wilderness, leaning upon her beloved? Song of Songs 8:5. Solomon had a vineyard at Balaamon. He let out the vineyard unto keepers, every one for the fruit thereof was to bring 1,000 pieces of silver. My vineyard, which is mine, is before me. Thou, O Solomon, must have 1,000, and those that keep the fruit thereof 200. Song of Songs 8:11-12. From the above verses we can deduce the following. The girl's name was Shelemite. She came from Lebanon and had dark skin. She was a shepherdess and a guardian of vineyards. Without her knowledge and against her will she was on the chariots of my princely people and was placed in the palace among many queens, concubines, and virgins of Solomon, whose bed, palanquin, is guarded by 60 soldiers. She longs for someone who is not in the palace, and her love for him causes contempt and even physical suffering. She looks for her beloved through the lattices in the window, and she is reminded of him, even at banquets with the king, by a little bag of aromatic spices, hidden under the coat. Perhaps based on the above information, it wasn't unreasonable of us to create a story that, although not explicitly recorded in the Bible, can constitute a backdrop for the wonderful poetry of love and yearning composed by Solomon in the Song of Songs. Song of Solomon, in Hebrew Shir HaSirim, or Song of Songs, is in many respects unique. Nowhere does it explicitly mention God, spirituality, religiousness, or prayer. Therefore, Jewish scholars for a long time speculated on what basis this text found itself in the canon of sacred books, and whether it really belongs there. Finally, the dispute over the canonicity of this book was resolved during the Sanhedrin of Yavne in 90 AD. Rabbi Akiba said then, "The world was never as worthy as on the day that the Song of Songs was given to Israel, for all the writings are holy, whereas the Song of Songs is the holiest of the holy." Rashi, another rabbi, described the holiness of the Song of Songs in the following manner: "To what can this be compared? To a king who took a sea, about 3.5 gallons, of wheat and gave it to a baker. He said to him, 'Extract for me so much fine flour, so much bran, so much coarse bran, and you shall produce enough fine flour for one white loaf, sifted and superior.'" Rashi. This book is nowhere explicitly cited by the writers of the New Testament. In several comparisons one could detect certain connections, but still they are not direct references to this book. And we need to add that this is the only book of the Old Testament which is not quoted or mentioned in the New Testament. Despite these initial doubts, among the Jews, Song of Songs is the favorite and probably the most frequently read and discussed book of the Bible outside the Torah. It constitutes the first part of the Five Scrolls Megillah collection, and is read during the spring festival of Passover, in the days of unleavened bread. Its words accompany, which is quite natural, almost every wedding ceremony. Passages from the Song of Songs are also pondered on Fridays, when the Sabbath is being welcomed. According to some traditions, this book is read in its entirety every Friday evening. In the mystical branches of Judaism, this book has become the basis for more reflection, interpretation and meditation than any other book. The main protagonists of the poem are Shulamit and her beloved, in Hebrew, Dodi. The name Shulamit, Song 7:1, is derived from the core SHLM, the same, which is the basis of the word Shalom, peace, prosperity, and also the name of Solomon. The Hebrew word Dodi, translated my beloved, first of all resembles the name David, which in Hebrew is spelled with the three letters, DVD. While my beloved, Dodi, is written in Hebrew as Dodi, which could also be translated as my David. The same word, written as Dodi, occurs in 1 Chronicles 27:1 as a proper name, while in Isaiah 5:1 Dodi is symbolic of God. "Let me sing now for my well-beloved a song of my beloved, Dodi, concerning his vineyard." Common New American Standard. These two characters in Song of Songs are joined by the chorus of Daughters of Zion, for example Song of Songs 5:9, and the Brothers of Shulamit, Song 8:8-9, 11:12. In the above interpretation, where the beloved shepherd and the king are two separate individuals, we also have, as a secondary character in the background, Solomon, the master of the harem. There are various explanations of the symbolism of these protagonists and their relationships. The Jews believe that this poem describes the love between God, Shepherd Dodi, and Israel, the beautiful Shulamit. At a ceremony welcoming the Sabbath, it is the Messianic Sabbath that becomes the bridegroom, and the bride anticipating his arrival is the believing Israel. In the believing Jewish homes on Friday evening they sing a song whose words were written in the 16th century by Rabbi Shlomo Hilvai Alkibitz. It's called Lecha Dodi, Adis, Come, My Beloved, which could be the title song ceremony of our discourse. Let's quote just a few of it. Welcoming the Sabbath, it is the Messianic Sabbath that becomes the bridegroom, and the bride anticipating his arrival is the believing Israel. In the believing Jewish homes on Friday evening they sing a song whose words were written in the 16th century by Rabbi Shlomo Hilvai Alkibitz. It's called Lecha Dodi, Come, My Beloved, which could be the title song of our discourse. Let's quote just a few of its verses in literal translation. Ref. Let's go, my beloved, to meet the bride and let us welcome the presence of Shabbat. 3. Sanctuary of the King. Royal city, arise. Leave from the midst of the turmoil, long enough have you sat in the valley of tears and he will take great pity upon you compassionately. 4. Shake yourself free, rise from the dust, dress in your garments of splendor, my people, by the hand of Jesse's son of Bethlehem, redemption draws near to my soul. 6. Do not be embarrassed. Do not be ashamed. Why be downcast? Why groan? All my afflicted people will find refuge within you, and the city shall be rebuilt on her hill. Let us learn the chorus of this song. Lakadoti Likarot Kalup Nai Shabbat Nikablo Come Had My Beloved, the bride to meet, the inner light of Shabbat, let us greet. According to the Christian understanding, Song of Songs describes the love between Jesus as the bridegroom and his bride, the church. But the love for Jesus is no different from the love we bestow upon the Father. The greatest commandment says that we must love the Father with all our heart, with all our soul, and with all our strength, Deuteronomy 6:5, Matthew 22:37-38. The love for Jesus, the Son of God, our bridegroom, is a part of love for the Heavenly Father. Do we love Jesus? Of course. What kind of question is this? Does love need a description, or a definition, for us to know how to love? Probably not. Love is an emotion that we feel with all the cells of our body. Actions, words, and body language are but external manifestations of love. We would not want to love with words only, 1 John 3:18. It is necessary to show it in action. But would we want to limit love only to works which do not result from what the heart feels? And if I give all my possessions to feed the poor, and if I surrender my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing, 1 Cor 13:3. Theonor, emotional love requires words. Spouses are well aware of that. The declaration of love should also be beautiful. If it is dressed in a poetic form, it delights us and kindles the feeling in the person confessing it, and also the one upon whom the confession is bestowed. Song of Songs is full of beautiful, poetic confessions of love. They can be used to express the love of Jesus and the church, and also, as in the Jewish interpretation, one can find there the feelings that bind God and his believers. Reading of this book kindles and feeds our feelings towards Jesus his Father. Meditating on the descriptions of this love deepens our feelings, adds to them a glow of a divine knowledge and competence. However, what seems to me the most important and beautiful in this book is the feeling of yearning, the feeling of unfulfilled love. And so it is, dear brethren, that we love most what we don't have. Sadly, sometimes in a permanent relationships, whether it is marriage or friendship, or our fellowship, or even in our relationship with God and Jesus, we encounter routine and habit, which kill the enthusiasm and extinguish the flame of love. Routine love becomes the love in words and deeds. On the outside, everything seems to be fine. However, warmth and enthusiasm are missing. Sometimes one needs to lose something, at least for a while, to appreciate how much it meant. It often happens in life that only this experience of yearning can restore the lost warmth and a glow. Shulamit, this beautiful girl locked in a palace, looking through the lattices for her shepherd, is a wonderful symbol of the beautiful feelings enslaved by temporality. We are locked in the palaces of our flesh. Our bodies, dear brethren, are not generally narrow cells, but beautiful, spacious houses and even palaces. God gave us wonderful bodies and minds. We are able to think, feel, speak, perform good deeds with your hands. We can tell our feet to carry us to good places and people. As long as our bodies are relatively healthy, we can say that they are a comfortable dwelling. But our bodies are also a limitation. They need food and heat. This in turn is associated with work. Working leads to being dependent on other people, and often to lack of time. These bodily limitations cause invoking us the feeling of dissatisfaction. If we really love God and His Son, if we love their kingdom, we will never feel that we are devoting enough time to really understand what they expect from us and how we could best meet these expectations. And this very sense of dissatisfaction and limitation is an important fuel, feeding the fire of our love for God, Jesus, and the spiritual world. The more we suffer from lack and limitation, the more we yearn for liberation and holiness. And the more we yearn, the more we love. The object of our longing and love is not only God or Jesus as a being, but also their spiritual reality, the sacred garden where our love was born. Only sometimes, perhaps in our brotherly fellowship, or in the isolation of prayer, are we able to enter this wonderful world of God's emotions, if only for a short while. Then, we must again return to the valley of the shadow of death. In this valley we sometimes experience quite pleasant moments, but even then let the bag of myrrh and spikenard, tied close to our heart, constantly remind us of the spiritual love of the great shepherd of the sheep. When in the world there are signs of spring, when the Christian religiousness awakes, when we get fresh meat in due season, when the fig tree of Israel blooms, when once again the walls of its vineyards are rebuilt, let it also revive our love of the bridegroom, who as a young deer is already leaping on the hills of this world. When we sometimes encounter difficulties, when we are dying of love and yearning so much that we run out at night onto the walls of this world, and we are met there with a lack of understanding, with ridicule, and even with suffering and persecution, then let us remember that on the way back, we will discover on our hands traces of precious liquid myrrh left on our door handle by our shepherd bridegroom. These and many other poetic descriptions of our yearning love for Jesus, God and for the spiritual messianic Sabbath of the millennium, can all be found in the book called Song of Songs. It is worth looking into as often as possible, so we can rekindle our love again and again. One other thing is worth remembering. It is not only Shilamit that yearns. The Song of Songs also describes the love and longing of the shepherd. He also dreams of his beautiful guardian of the vineyard. He misses her and reminisces on her wonderful beauty. How is it then? Does Jesus longs for us? Can God feel yearning love for the believers? The Song of Songs shows that it is indeed possible. We are material beings, and the God and Jesus are spirit beings. Today our contact with them is limited, not only for us, but probably also for God and for Jesus. They also dream of finally meeting us in person, in the spiritual nature, when we can see Jesus as he is, 1 John 3:2. God needs us. It is he who found us, and not the other way round. Jesus so loved us that he agreed to suffer as a man and die as a result of this love for his bride. Jesus loves you, dear sister, dear brother. Jesus needs you, Jesus longs for you. So when we return to our homes, when we are overcome with the yearning for fellowship with the Father, with Jesus, with the brethren, with the loved ones, let us open the Song of Songs. Let us read this wonderful poetry. Let's hum some of its verses. Let's allow it to rekindle anew the flame of our love. It will help us to feel the wonderful scent of the Garden of Love, where once we met Jesus. Awake, O north wind, and come, thou south. Blow upon my garden, that the spices thereof may flow out. Let my beloved come into his garden. Song of Songs 4:16, Amen.